Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, good evening. Good evening, CMR. Can you all hear me? Am I on the air? I hope so. My microphone is on. Do you all hear me? Hello, I can see there's a lot of people in there. I think there's a lot of people in the... Paul is just asking people to refresh so that we get to hear. Don't forget to press the button, the play button. I hope I'm not speaking on deaf ears. Lisa is there. Oh, Paul, thank you, loud and clear. Lisa is there, that's nice. And the Reverend Wawa, who's not actually a vicar, like the boxing vicar, so I'm told. But he is just called that. So, okay, George, no problem. Lisa's on there too, that's good. That's good. I want to hear a drumbeat of chat comments here telling me I'm ready to go. I think it sounds all right to me. Well then, if you're sitting comfortably, I shall begin.
You're listening to Critical Mass Radio. Now, it's our turn.
Hospital Porter's pride and dignity stop the new world order. Welcome to Panwo Radio.
Hello, and indeed welcome to program 2 of Panwo Radio. My name is Ben Emlyn Jones, and hello to everyone in the CMR chat room and anyone else listening tonight. Now, this is my first live show. This is actually the second Hapanro Radio broadcast. The first one is podcasted, but was never broadcast live. This is the second show. It's my first live show, so do bear with me. You know, do bear with me. Hapanro, Hospital Porters Against the New World Order. That's what it stands for. Hapanro Radio, Hospital Porters Against the New World Order. Tune in for all the latest news, views, and reviews from the world of government cover-ups, ghosts, UFOs, hospital porters, paranormal investigation, hidden knowledge, forbidden history and archaeology, chemtrails, and more hospital porters. That song was had a very sibilant title. It was called Ooh Ah, Just a Little Bit by a lady called Gina G. And that was for Carol. Carol, if you're listening, Carol is a receptionist at the John Radcliffe Hospital, who I only spoke to today, who said she would be tuning in. She has never listened to CMR before, let alone Hapanro Radio. So do make her welcome. Carol, if you're listening, first-time listener, welcome. That song actually was from the Eurovision Song Contest. Gina G was Britain's entry into the festival in 1996, and this is her song. In my opinion, it's one of the few good things to come out of the Eurovision Song Contest. I'm not a fan of that event, I must say. I mean, people say that the longest day of the year is June the 21st, the summer solstice. I say no, it's whichever day they have the Eurovision Song Contest. I mean, honestly, 99% of the songs are complete crap, and 99% of the time you know exactly what's going to happen. Isn't it? Ireland will win and Turkey will come last. What's more, why is Israel in it? Israel is not in Europe, yet it always gets into the Eurovision Song Contest, you know. And I think there's a very, very sinister and distasteful side to this, because Israel actually has one of the worst human rights records in the entire world. And really there's an issue there, I think. I'm surprised there's not protesters outside there, like there used to be when South Africa was in the Olympics and things like that. Right, let's have a roll call on the chat board. We have an awful lot here. Oh, someone can't hear me. Anon. I'm sorry, Anon. Try refreshing or using Google Chrome. All right? Sorry about that. We have... okay, Anon. If one of the others can reply to him, I'll be grateful. Sorry, I'm a bit busy right now, obviously. But we've got Reverend Wawa and Paul. And we have Lisa, right? And hi, Carol. It's Carol is listening. And Paul says, bring back Bucks Fizz. I absolutely agree. I just said... that Gina G was one of the only good things to come out of the Eurovision Song Contest. There are others, and Bucks Fizz is one of them, yeah. And their name also makes a great spoonerism, if you're in that sort of mood. Right, on this show, we're going to actually deal with a very serious matter indeed. Now, the truth movement covers all kinds of different disciplines and subjects. In fact, it covers multitude of all kinds of subjects. Some people focus on a particular one, others are a bit like me, they're kind of jacks of all trades and masters of none. The subject we're going to deal with today, I think, is probably the most harrowing and most disturbing of any within the truth movement. That is the institutional and organized abuse and murder of children. Nobody has more experience of this subject than the guest who's going to come onto the show. And those people who have experience of it, nobody has stood up and fought back against this monstrosity as much as the man I'm going to interview. It's a great honour for Hapanro Radio and for CMR to have Kevin Annett. Kevin is a man I've known for a long time. I've worked with him before. And if you go onto YouTube, you'll see lectures, which he's done, which I filmed. I've done everything I can to assist him. And we're going to discuss some of his most recent activities that are going on at the moment. But to give you a brief background, Kevin is a Canadian who was actually a vicar. He was a vicar in Canada and at a place called Port Alberni in British Columbia. And he did what vicars do, you know. He met lots of people, obviously. It's a very social job. And thing is, the Indians he met, the native Canadians, told him that... They told him the story of the residential schools. Now, the residential school system was set up in the 19th century, and it went on till 1992, frighteningly recently. Its purpose, apparently, was to provide education for the children of the very remote tribes of Canada, this huge, vast, very sparsely populated country. The problem was it wasn't providing education. What it was doing was, well, half the kids who went into those schools didn't come out. The other half came out telling stories of murder, sexual abuse, medical experimentation, torture, and almost every kind of depravity you can imagine. Kevin tried to raise the alarm about this and make protests within his church, and he was brutally punished for it by the church authorities. This is a secret that they do not want revealing, but unfortunately they didn't succeed because it has been revealed. So later on we're going to have Kevin on, we're going to have Kevin Annett on the line, live from British Columbia, Canada. It's actually, it's now just 7:10 here. It's actually sort of about lunchtime where he is, so he's probably just settling down at lunch while we're ready, getting ready for our dinner, or we've had our dinner, but he's going to be on the line. We're also going to be doing space weather later on. Some interesting new things, interesting things to talk about there. So that's all coming up in the next hour and three quarters. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Critical Mass Radio. Now it's our turn.
And if you enjoy this show and you enjoy the other shows on Critical Mass Radio, why not make a donation? Anything is greatly appreciated. Just click the donate button, put in a couple of quid, and I think you'll agree that it's money well spent. Well, I've got a few corrections I've got to make to Program 1. Now, if you go to the Hapanwo radio blog, which is in the Hapanwo blog website, you'll see that there's a link to the podcast for Program 1, so you can still listen to it. I made a mistake in there. There's a man called, I said that a man called Andrew McDonald was involved in what I thought was a propaganda film for the BBC. I don't want to go libeling or slandering anybody, because there might be a real Andrew McDonald out there who currently has stones being thrown at his window and people with placards outside his house. So let me just correct that. It was not Andrew McDonald. It was a man called Andrew Maxwell. So, so that's just to let you know that that's the case. Right then. We're now going to proceed with another song. It has a great opening. Don't touch the dial. Stay where you're sitting. And we will be right back after Eric B. and Rakim.
This is a journey into sound. This is a journey into sound. A journey which along the way will bring to you new color, new dimension, new value.
When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Pump up the volume, pump up the volume.
Pump that bass.
Bring you a special news bulletin from our on-the-spot passport.
Oh, my gosh. The music just turns me on.
Thinking of a master plan.
Step with the record. Step with the record.
Thinking of a master plan.
Step with the record. Step with the record.
Thinking of a master plan. This ain't nothing but sweat inside my hands. So I dig into my pocket, all my money spent. So I get deeper, but still coming up for lunch. So I start my mission, leave my residence, thinking how could I get some dead presidents. I need money. I used to be a stick up kid, so I think of all the devious things I did. I used to roll up, this is a hole up. Ain't nothing funny, stop smiling. You still don't nothing move but the money. But now I learn to earn cause I'm righteous. I feel great, so maybe I might just search for a 9-to-5. If I strive, then maybe I stay alive. So I walk up the street, whistling this, feeling out of place, cause man, do I miss a pen and a paper, a stereo, a tape for me and Eric being a nice big plate of this, which is my favorite dish. But without no money, it's still a wish. Cause I don't like to dream about getting paid. So I dig into the books of the rhymes that I made. So now to test to see if I got pulled. Hit the studio, cause I'm paid in full. Full.
volume, pump up the volume.
Wait a minute, you better talk to my mother.
Porter's pride and dignity, stop the new world order. Welcome to Panwo Radio.
And that was Eric B. and Rakim, Paid in Full, a hip-hop song from the 80s. Now, hip-hop has changed an awful lot since those days. I mean, I think in those days it was something actually quite soulful and deep and thoughtful. A lot of the artists were very, very poetic, and they're so different nowadays. And now you just get guys with sunglasses waving guns around, yelling N-words and MF-words continuously. It's just pathetic. I really don't like modern hip-hop at all. So I hope you enjoyed that. And like I said, it had a great opening. I love that crescendo-like opening. And just a little bit, the first song I played, I mean, the full version of that has the same thing. It has a wonderful... The first two bars, I think, are just wonderful. But unfortunately, the only version of that song that seems to play on Blog Talk Radio is the one which doesn't have that, which is a shame. Right, now if you were enjoying this show and you enjoy Hapanwo and you want a bit more, well, I advise you to buy a copy of the magazine Rich Planet Extra, which is coming out probably later next month or early August. Now, the first issue is free, so you can just order it anyway. Rich Planet Extra is the magazine published by richplanet.net, which is Richard P. Hall's institution. Now, you may well be familiar with Rich Planet TV. You may have seen my interviews on there even. Now, Richard does a great TV show. He does great articles. He does live lectures. And now he's doing a magazine. I do hope you buy this and enjoy it because it contains lots of analysis and more in-depth, easy reading, and something to get your teeth into, you know, when the TV show's finished. I particularly want you to buy a copy because I'm one of the columnists. I'm also the editor. I promise you we will do a good job, and I think you will like it. Right, if you want to talk to me, as I say, I'm trying to read your comments in the chat box. We have Lisa here and the Reverend Wawa. Oh, Green Man's here. Hey, it's OK Noosk. Hello. I was hoping you'd be. I'd hope you'd tune in. Hi, how you doing? Oh, I really like your YouTube stuff and your show. Your show is one of the ones I haven't listened to all of them, unfortunately, but I do like this one. Yeah, how you doing? So you can listen to me, you can get me on the chat box, or you can, if I try to do a phone in, I'll do a phone in. You can also email me at Hapanwo, H-P-A-N-W-O, at criticalmassradio.co.uk. And if you send me a good email, I might well read it out in my next show. And we'll discuss it. I think that'd be very good. Don't you? Yes, I do. So, there's more to come. Don't touch the dial, stay where you're sitting, and here we go for the rest of the show. Hapanwo Radio News. Yes, we have a whole series of news items which might interest you. A Baltic Sea UFO, Marcus Allen does a Charlie, slave fare in hospitals, and the GMO protests. Right, and believe it or not, this is a rather strange story indeed. A treasure hunter I don't think they like to be called that. I think they like to be called Marine Salvage Operatives. But anyway, he's a treasure hunter. On the 25th of January, he discovered a very, very strange-looking object on the bed of the Baltic Sea. And, well, I hope you can... That's it. And... Bet with me. Yeah, what happened was that, yeah, it was a strange disc-shaped object. Now, further examination has shown it to be a kind of broken disc, and it's shown a remarkable resemblance to the Millennium Falcon spacecraft from Star Wars. And basically, some divers have now gone to investigate it, and there was a bit of hoo-ha over exactly what they had found. Now, there was a lot of talk around the net saying that this was a crashed UFO on the bed of the Baltic Sea. I doubt that for several reasons. I doubted it at the time, I wasn't sure, but I thought, well, if it was, would the divers ever come up again? Or would they meet with a little accident? You know how it is. Anyway, what they found, though, is actually, I don't think it's a UFO, but it's something almost as interesting. It's a stone or cement structure standing on the bed of the sea. It's mushroom-shaped, they describe it as. It's not an alien spacecraft, but they say it's made of rock or cement. Now, it looks like it may well be artificial. Now, this is the thing. I mean, what is a man-made object doing on the bed of the sea? There's only one explanation. It was put up there. It was put up there when? That was on dry land. And as you know, sea level fluctuates, and the Baltic Sea, the level of the Baltic Sea fluctuates like any other sea level. Now, it would be possible to date the minimum age of the object by knowing when it was last on land. And then people like Graham Hancock and Michael Cremo have actually found that, you know, our vision of the past is actually false. And there was actually very, very sophisticated monuments and structures stretching way back into antiquity that we have not been told about. And, you know, we're basically told, according to official history and official archaeology and prehistory, basically we were just skin-wearing savages who grunted and waved wooden clubs in the air until around 3000 BC, and then suddenly we came out with pyramids and architecture and writing and philosophy and law and science. Before then, we were just sort of like dodging mammoths, you know, saber-toothed tigers and other such thing, and basically living in caves and tents. Well, it seems that's not the case. And there is a very, very, there's a big record. And this is a big subject, which I might go into more detail in a future show, but it seems likely that there were very, very sophisticated city-dwelling cultures with science, literature, art, and other hallmarks of civilization stretching back into antiquity. Graham Hancock, like I say, and Michael Cremer, interesting people to look at. But it's all been covered up. The academia doesn't want us to know this. Why? Well, it's a good question. One that's worth thinking about, you know? Marcus Allen. Now, I know Marcus. Marcus Allen is the editor of Nexus magazine. And, There's a rumor going around that he's actually done a kind of U-turn, because one of the things he studied was the idea that the moon landings were faked, and he gives his reasons for this, and they're quite sound, I think. He's mentioned it in Nexus magazine. He's been on television talking about this. Now, a couple of months ago, he attended a live debate at the British Interplanetary Society, right? And since then, he's apparently seen the light. He's realized that the moon landings were real after all. And there's a thread on a forum which is talking about this. And apparently Marcus Allen's become a member of the British Interplanetary Society. Now, there was a lot of speculation on this particular forum thread, which was a sceptic-based forum. They were basically saying, well, that's it, we've won him over, you know. That's actually not the case. Now, I was one of the people who appealed for calm, as I did before, because this isn't the first time this has happened. There's a very, very well-known former member of the Truth Movement, or he still gets involved in truth issues, but he's more mainstream now, who used to believe that 9/11 was an inside job. And he very, very famously sort of did a U-turn on that and sort of had a kind of Paulian road to Damascus conversion. And after he did a mainstream TV show on the subject. And now the reaction from the rest of the people was that he received an awful lot of very, very harsh criticism, and so he should. He deserved that. But on top of the sort of more reasonable criticism, He also was attacked by a trolling campaign of which I've never seen before. People hurling abuse, calling him names, saying unspeakable things that I wouldn't repeat on air, even if I wouldn't even repeat privately. I think this is a mistake. I think we do ourselves no favours when we behave like this. It's completely wrong to treat people like this. You know, if someone has a viewpoint, then that viewpoint, if we think it's wrong, we have to challenge it. We have to do it in a academic and respectful manner, as we would do with Marcus Allen and this other man I'm talking about, who I'm sure you all know. I don't need to say his name, but you all know who I'm talking about. I think we should remain professional. That's what I'm saying, and I think we should with Marcus. So if Marcus says any more on this subject, it appears that he has changed his mind, please, yes, criticise him, but please do it politely. I will not be cancelling my subscription to Nexus magazine, and I'd advise any of you who read it not to either. Let him swap benches if he wants, you know. He's allowed to do that if he wants. But, I mean, from what I've seen, actually, I mean, this is now a couple of months ago, and Marcus hasn't made any kind of public recanting of his kind of beliefs. So maybe it's all a big storm in a teacup. I don't know. I mean, you can watch the debate live online. It doesn't appear to me like he goes through any kind of conversion process like the other man did, the other person I was talking about did with the BBC program over 9/11. Right. Slave fair. What is slave fair? Well, it's... how can I begin? Well, basically, what they're doing is they brought slave fare to a hospital. Now, slave fare is a name I give. It's a kind of dysphemism for what is known as unpaid job seekers' work experience, which is basically where people who've been on long-term unemployed are given work experience so that they become more and more accustomed to the working environment. It's very good for them, you know. It's very, very good indeed. Well, actually... Where do I... You know, the ethical and practical problems associated with this kind of program is absolutely... I don't know where to begin. You know, I mean, it's so disappointing, you know, that this is going on. And people, unfortunately, a lot of people are saying, yeah, get on their bike. Bloody unemployed people, get them into work. Millions on the dole. Why are they so lazy? Well, you know, this goes back to Margaret Thatcher and Norman Tebbit and people like that in the 1980s who said that. Get on their bike. That was Norman Tebbit's catchphrase. The truth of the matter is the levels of unemployment are directly proportional to the economy. People don't suddenly just become lazy when we get a recession. You know, they don't suddenly get over their laziness when the economy picks up. And it's an insult. And it is an act of inhumanity to say so, and it's patronising, it's insulting to the millions who are unemployed because of this problem, because of the economy and everything. And it's also the government are effectively saying, we can't afford you, we can't afford to give you a proper job. You know, so can we just pretend we're giving you a job and then not pay you? Then it will look as if you're working, and that's what matters. You know, I mean, I'm actually all in favour of getting unemployed people into work, but it's got to be really, really, it's got to be real work where you get paid a wage. Isn't that too much to ask? There's another problem with this. It's that a system like this has actually been tried out several times before. And what happened was, in America they tried this out, and they called it workfare. A group of 20 long-term unemployed people were given unpaid jobs cleaning the streets in a city in the United States. The problem was that the city's sanitation services had to make 20 of its properly employed staff redundant to create vacancies for these unemployed workfare crews. And that is the crux of the matter. This is the practical... What you're doing is these things actually create unemployment because they have to make more people unemployed to create vacancies for these job fairs, work fair, work experience, whatever you choose to call it. I call it slavery because that's what I thought being paid, being working, getting no paid was. So don't give me any nonsense about slavery being abolished 200 years ago. It's alive and well and it's coming back. What will I think of next, eh? The return of the workhouse, perhaps? Shh, I shouldn't give them ideas. And what's happened is, I mean, I long predicted this, that they would build it up slowly. They build it up slowly into different areas. They start off with, like, supermarkets, and they move it into other shops, and then they move it into other services. And now it's in hospitals. Now they're actually bringing workfare, job slave fare, slave unpaid job seekers, work experience people, into hospitals. And I knew this would happen. Everyone, I think the ultimate goal is to have everyone, especially in the so-called unskilled sector, turned into unpaid servants of the state. And this is a return to Roman-style civic slavery. You know, so they're bringing it in slowly so we don't notice it. You know, employers are sort of coerced into it. Some of them are ordered to. In public service, they're ordered to. Other companies are coerced through greed and fear. And government bureaucrats, you know, just do as they're told. They're just mindless lackeys. And they endorse the scheme. And it's really terrible this is happening now in hospitals. Luckily, there is a resistance to this. I mean, there was a protest where people invaded a branch of Tesco's a couple of months ago and did a big placard shouting, you know, what do we want? Real jobs. When do we want it? Now. And I thought that was wonderful. You know. This is actually not the first time, like I said before, that slave fare schemes have been tried out by this government and in other countries too. In fact, their history can be traced back right to the earliest periods of the welfare state. All the trials have failed because of these various moral and practical downfalls that I've described. Hopefully, I think this one's going to go the same way. It looks like it's going to go the same way, but there's no doubt that this is the most far-reaching and most vigorous attempt ever to bring it in. You know, they've gone much further than they've ever gone before, and that's what worries me, I think. Now then, Rothamsted. The Rothamsted Research Centre is in Harpenden, Hertfordshire, and a few weeks ago there was a group organising a protest, decided to go in there and do a big demo, and they got a wonderful name. These people, they're called Take the Flower Back, and they got a good website. And now my own views on genetically modified crops are very long and very detailed, and maybe I can discuss them in a later show. There's plenty on the Hapanwo blog about it, but it's really kind of, I mean, I'm basically opposed to them. I'm opposed to genetically modified food of any kind, or genetically modified organisms of any kind, because I consider it a part of the New World Order. Now, there was a very, oddly enough, there was a very, very sedate and much more sort of urbane counter-demonstration by a group of sceptics. Now, a man called Mark Henderson led them, and he's a former science correspondent for The Times, and I actually saw a live lecture by him a few weeks beforehand, and he's done several articles about this subject, saying that he actually supports these experiments. He thinks they should go ahead. He says there's no danger to human health from GMOs, which I think is a load of crap. I think there's very good evidence to say there is a danger to human health. As for the danger to the biosphere and to the environment and to nature, I think it's undeniably bad. It's undeniably terrible. But, I mean, I resent this man because he plays a very, very dirty game of moral blackmail in his article. It's on a website called thegeekmanifesto.wordpress.com. And he says that if you buy GMO foods, you're going to eat less fruit and vegetable. You'll be feeding your children less fruit and vegetable because organic foods are so much more expensive. Well, I think that's a pretty cheap shot, actually, to use that on people. You know, secondly, the price difference between organic and non-organic food is actually narrowed. And it is actually still more expensive to eat organic food, but it's not quite as expensive as it was a few years ago. And there's some, you can actually get Yo Valley butter, which is it's an organic brand, and it actually costs less than many of the non-organic brands. You know, so that's not so. Don't worry. Anyway, Yo Valley, that's 50 quid. Send it in the post. Right then, here we go. Thank you very much for listening to Hapanwo News. Hapanwo Radio News. Hapanwo Radio Space Weather. Right, so we here's space weather for this day, 26th of June, 2011. I think obviously the most significant space weather event, and indeed the most significant event in astronomy to happen over the last couple of weeks, was the transit of Venus. Now, this is effectively an eclipse where Venus comes between the Sun and the Earth. It took place on the 5th of June. Coincidentally, perhaps, this is directly after the Queen's Diamond Jubilee. There's a whole can of worms we've opened there. Interestingly, there was a partial lunar eclipse just the day before, so it gets curiouser and curiouser, and people are coming out with all kinds of ideas, you know, about this. There's going to be no lunar eclipse now until November the 28th. But keep looking out for those. The Venus transit, like you said, the Venus passed, the little disk of Venus passed across the Sun like a tiny little spot. And it's quite interesting to watch. Sometimes you get this gutta nigra effect, which is where it looks like a black drop. And gutta nigra means black drop. And no one knows why that is, but for some reason, it's sort of like it blends with the... It's sort of like it's distorted as it crosses the edge of the Sun. No one knows why that is. Last night, on the 25th, somebody saw noctilucent clouds. And these were seen over Scotland. Now, noctilucent clouds are clouds that are very, very high up in the atmosphere and glow at night. That's what noctilucent means. It means glowing at night. And it's basically they are energized by radiation from the Sun. And they're like blue clouds in the sky at night. And there's some lovely photos of them, you know. It's rather like the aurora borealis, or the aurora australis, if you're actually in the south, in the southern hemisphere. That's what it's called, the aurora australis. But it's the same thing. It's where the Sun's radioactivity interferes with the atmosphere and the Earth's magnetic field. Oh, on the subject of the Sun and its magnetosphere, there are still no sunspot-free days. We have not one single day this year where there's been no sunspots, which is very, very strange. We're now halfway through the year, we still haven't had one. Very, very strange because just a couple of years, we had a very, very quiet period of the Sun. In 2010, there were just 51 days. There were 51 days where there were no sunspots. In 2009, there were 260 days without sunspots. I mean, it's an incredible amount. The Sun was basically almost asleep for a whole year. Today, there's one small spot on the southwestern quadrant of the solar disk, but that still doesn't count as spot-free. It's been a quiet week for solar flares. It's just been A and B class solar flares, which are kind of the midgets of the solar flare world. I mean, they're minute. I mean, it's M and X class solar flares that actually could cause damage. These are just little pops, basically. However, you know, there's been A and B class solar flares all week, but today, the 26th of June, it actually pushed up to a C. Just after midnight, we had a C-class solar flare. Geomagnetic storms are also quiet on all latitudes. They're registered as active 10%. There's a 10% chance of activity. The scale goes active, and then minor storms and severe storms. So active is basically nothing. The moon is in half today. We've got a half moon, and it's waxing to full. The next full moon is going to be July the 3rd. Near-Earth asteroids. This is an interesting one. We've had another one that's come within the lunar orbit, June the 21st. An asteroid called 2012 MF7 came within 0.8 lunar distances, which means, for a short time, it was the closest natural object to the Earth, closer than the moon. On June the 29th, we're actually going to have another one. It's 2012 MY2. This is another asteroid. It's only 13 feet in diameter, and 2012 MF7 was only 17 feet in diameter. But, you know, they're still quite large. That's quite big when you think about it. After these two have gone past, because 2012 MY2 is going to pass on the June 29th within 1.3 lunar distances, so it's still further than the moon. After that, there's going to be no near-Earth asteroids. That is less than 20 lunar distances till at least the end of August. So that's good news. We've got a little bit of a ease in the fire. The solar wind is 54.8087 protons per cubic inch, and the speed of the solar wind is 684.7 miles per second. That was Panwo Space Weather. Come on.
Chaos, my controller is gone. I'm commanding my drone. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Anwo Radio Space Weather.
Hospital Port has pride and dignity. Stop the New World Order. Welcome to Panwo Radio.
Oh my God, that wasn't very nice. Oh, that sounded very, very, that sounded awfully wobbly. But then I've heard, actually, if you're actually the host and you're listening to your own jingles and your own audio clips, you sometimes get that. They sound a little bit wobbly. But we're getting in there. Anyway, we're slightly ahead of schedule, actually. I must have been going a little bit too quick. Let's have a look. I just got a little message from Kevin. Kevin is on the line and he's going to be with us very shortly. Thanks, Kevin. We will be with you in a very, very short while. Now then, let's have a look at the comments. Let's have a look at the chat box. We got a pummeling. We got a virtual drumbeat of various posts in here. Odin Wild Hunt is there and Paul Giovanni. That's where all the missing pens and socks go. Oh my goodness. Are we talking about the hollow moon now, or something like that? The Earth, the hollow Earth. Oh, my goodness. We've got an awful lot to say about that. But I've come into this conversation a little bit late, unfortunately, which happens when you're talking, unfortunately. No more jokes about Uranus, please. All right, and I won't say anything. I won't say anything. I won't even say that there are rings around Uranus. I won't say that there are moons behind Uranus. Yep. Patrick Moore will be probing into Uranus. Uranus is a gas giant. Anyway, how are you doing? You enjoying the show? I hope so. Holy do. I hope you are. Now then, which, as I said, I'm sure we've got a little bit of time to fill up, but Kevin is going to call back soon. So until then, we'll talk a little bit more about Kevin and this interview that's coming up. We'll get through as much as we can, and if we have time, we'll take calls, but that might not be possible because Kevin has an awful lot to talk about. In Program 1, if you'll remember, we interviewed Scott Felton, the ufologist. There's no update so far on the Bedouin Mountains incident, but I do keep looking out for it. I know Richard D. Hall is looking out for it. I'm in touch with Scott still, and he always keeps me posted about what's going to happen. I mean, I really enjoyed Scott's interview. I thought he was very, very good. And like I said, I wish we'd had longer. And I think that was the only criticism I had of it, actually, was it was not long enough. And we had, that's something that I'm going to actually address it this time, because we're going to have a longer interview, which is going to be, so we'll have a lot more time to get into the subjects that Kevin talks about. So Kevin has actually been through a hell of a lot, actually. He's in recent years, I mean, he's actually had a lot of grief from the authorities over what he's doing. There's a definite attempt to silence him and to keep this secret buried. We can discuss this, actually, I think, during the interview about the motives behind the people who are perpetrating, and also the people who are keeping the secret, who may not be involved, but they're still collaborating with it. They're still going along with it, you know? Oh, thanks. Lisa says, great stuff. Thank you. Tim O'Shea, bring on the lizards. Tim, I'm getting ahead of myself here. That's coming in the next program. I'm already making plans for program 3, actually. You know, I've got some... Already got a guest I'm hoping to get on next week. I'll have to do it from Sue's house because I'm going to be away, so I'll have to do it from there. But I'm going to do the show on a computer. Now, let's see who's listening. We've got a lot of people listening. London is here. I can see there's this little map here. London. My goodness. It all seems to be on that hemisphere at the moment. Tim is saying Project Bluebeam. Fake invasion and all that. Yes, and with the Olympics coming up, we've got to deal with that, I think. Whereby such aliens are interdimensional beings, which are also demons, the djinn. That's right. I mean, the djinn are... I've spoken about the djinn before. It's something that I think the Muslims are very, very interested in, and they know an awful lot about. The djinn are beings who live on parallel worlds. So, it's a big subject, and it's too big to go into, but Tim, thank you for bringing that up. you know, and we'll certainly get on with it then. Okay, Nuska, hello, Dan, hello. We've never had a first coming yet, and we've had only 4 weeks to go. Yeah, my goodness. I mean, the theories are abounding, aren't they? You know, just... Well, we should continue. I'd like to welcome everyone who's listening from London, and I can't see any of the other cities who are there, but apparently Denmark was here earlier on. Denmark, if people from Denmark are still listening, how do you do? I can't speak Danish. So, and what we're going to do is, in a moment, we're going to have Kevin on. Kevin is actually on his way, and in the meantime, as I said, stay where you're sitting, don't touch your dials. Keep listening to her Panwo Radio. And now I'd like you to listen to a song that you will remember for the rest of your life.
Walks up our street. He's a worker for the council. Has been 20 years. And he takes no lip of nobody and litter off the gutter. Puts it in a bag and never thinks to mutter. And he bags lunch in the Sunday's back. Children call him bully. He never lets off. But I know because he once told me. He let me know a secret about the money in his kitty. He's gonna buy a dinghy, gonna call her Dignity. And I'll sail her up the west coast, through villages and towns. I'll be on the holidays, they'll be doing the rounds. They'll ask me how I got her, I'll say, save my money. They say, isn't she pretty? That ship's called Dignity. And I'm telling a story in a faraway sea, sipping down raki and reading Minarchy. And I'm thinking about home and all that that means, and a place in the winter for Dignity. And I'll sail up the west coast, through villages and towns. I'll be on my holidays, they'll be doing the rounds. They'll ask me how I got a house. I'll say, I save my money. I'll say, isn't she pretty? That ship called
Hospital Porter's pride and dignity. Stop the New World Order. Welcome to Panwo Radio.
Well, that was Dignity by Deacon Blue. The finest song they've ever produced. In fact, it's one of the greatest songs ever, I think. And I feel almost tearful, actually, listening to it. It's such a beautiful song. For me, it sums up and exemplifies and completely and utterly illustrates the hospital porter in experience. Because the song is not about hospital porters, but it feels like it is to me. I've always felt that from the first moment I ever heard it. I hope you enjoyed it too. There's very, very little I can actually say about it. It speaks for itself, I think. Now, what's going on in the description box? Odin Wildhunt, bless him, that's the host who's going to be on, I think, on the air now after me. He's posted a very, very interesting YouTube video, which is a good example of actually how not to do radio. And I'm sure no host on this station would ever do that. It's actually Liz Green of BBC Radio Leeds interviewing Ian R. Crane. And, you know, and it's actually, you have to listen to it, because I tell you what, it is so educational, because it shows you exactly what this propaganda is, and exactly how supposedly professional radio hosts actually behave when they're dealing with someone who is genuinely alternative. It's so sad. Ian actually does a brilliant job. I mean, he basically gets on, he knows what's coming. I think he expects it. And he basically gets out the information he wants to get out, says, this is IanRCrane.com. You know, this is IanRCrane.com, and all the DVDs are on YouTube and things like that. And he says, you can go and look for yourself, and you can just decide for yourself. What's really sad is that Liz Green actually did an interview about a week before this one with Timothy Good, an excellent ufologist who wasn't at the Exopolitics conference, but like Ian was. But I mean, I wish he would be there one day. It'd be great to have him there. Now, she actually did quite a good job with him. So I don't know why she suddenly did as she flipped with Ian. I don't know. I mean, maybe Ian is a bit more alternative than Tim. Ian is far more alternative than Timothy, actually. And Timothy's alternative enough. Odin Wildhunt said, she called him and caught him unawares. Yep, that doesn't surprise me. Lizard Green says, Reverend Wawa, yep. I don't know if she actually is. The thing is, you don't need to be a shapeshifter to behave in a reptilian manner. Humans are perfectly capable of reptilian behaviour, and in a sense that's what we are conditioned to, I think. So that's a sad thing. But thanks for posting that, Odin Wildhunt, because I think everyone needs to see that and listen to it. So the Exopolitics conference is the first one is next weekend. It's only a 1-day affair, but I'm looking forward to it very much. I'm going to go there, and next week I'll be doing a report, so you'll know more about what happened to me, and I'll talk about it, and it's should be interesting. There's going to be another one after that. Oh, right. Odin Wildhunt has reminded me of something else. Thank you, Odin. What's really, really, I'm meaning to talk about this. I should have remembered it. Nick Pope, God bless him. You can't have a UFO conference without him. Has been in the Daily Mail writing an article about how we've got to watch the skies for UFOs during the Olympics. Now, It's a bit ironic, really, because this is what people like Ian have been saying for years, and then Nick has said it in the Daily Mail. The difference is Nick says that there'll be real UFOs, not fake ones. Now, I personally think there are such things as real UFOs, but if aliens do appear at the Olympics and threaten everyone or do damage of any kind, I don't think it's wise to assume that they really come from outer space. They may come from much closer to home, and they may be... As I said, this could be the ultimate false flag operation we're looking at here. Ooh, it should. I think we should be aware of that. I mean, not that the Olympics, not that there's any certainty of what's going to happen at the Olympics. It could be nothing will happen. Could be so many people are talking about it. If they do anything, it will be too obvious. Nice. Now, what else is in here? What else have people been talking about? Just scroll up a little bit. Yeah, you've all been. I see you. There's a lot of people here. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Tim, big bye-bye, Ben. Tim, oh, shy, or she, 23, is gone. Oh, have you gone? Have you left? Well, if you've left, then goodbye, Tim, and thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the show. We have over here, Stockport is now on the line. Hello, Stockport, if you're listening. I bet you didn't know. We always know who's here, don't we? We always know who's talking. And that's an awful lot of people here. I'll just try and zoom in a little bit. Oh, blah, you can fiddle with this globe. It's quite funny. Right, it's like Google Earth, isn't it? Stockport, London, City of London. Oh, my God, the Rothschilds are listening. I thought they might be. Right, we're getting close to the time when Kevin is going to join us. And we're going to get him on there. Hopefully, if we have time, we'll get some people on there. People can phone in on Skype if we have time. I'm not sure if we have time to open the lines. We have an awful lot to talk about. But if you do, I will be ready to take your calls. Wildcard, west of the Rockies, you're on the air. Sorry, I won't do an impression of Art Bell again. Right, I think Kevin might be on the line. I'm just going to see. I'll just... Now then, if I can do this correctly, Kevin will be there. Hello, Kevin. Hello, Kevin, are you there? Hello?
Hi, it's Kevin.
Oh, hello, Kevin, how are you?
Good.
Oh, you're a bit dim. Is there any way you can turn the volume up?
How's this?
Right, try again. Hello, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
I can hear you. Can you all hear him there in the chat box? Can you hear Kevin? Sorry, we'll just...
Hi there.
Yeah, I think you're audible, Kevin. That's the main thing. Well, thank you very much for coming on to Hapanwo Radio this evening, or this at lunchtime where you are. It's a great honor to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for having me, Ben, and hi to everybody at your end.
It's good to have you back. It's good to talk to you again, Kevin. We've met before several times, and you gave a lecture. You've given several lectures which are available on YouTube, and one of them was filmed by me in Liverpool. Only a handful of people, unfortunately, turned up, but we reached many, many more people on the internet that way through the medium of YouTube. And since then, I mean, you've been doing an awful lot since then. I mean, you've been involved in both legal action and forensic archaeology, and... you've been busy in around the world, as well as in the Canada or the Republic of Kanata, as you'd like to call it. And shall we begin by talking about the public notice you posted on the website of the International Tribunal of Crimes of Church and State, which is this is the organisation you're working for. Could you tell us about the public notice you put up a few days ago?
I will. It's actually something that has been going on for well over a month. It was first served on Archbishop Dermot Martin in Dublin by our network in Ireland. And essentially what it says, it's 10 measures that the Vatican needs to undertake by September 15th, after which we intend to begin a whole series of church occupations and even performing citizens' arrests on known child-raping priests and those who protect them. So, you know, in essence, what it says is that it's time for the church to come under public control and common law, not to hide under its own legal system, which allows child rapists to get away with it and to hide under the umbrella of church protection. So we just basically have said enough's enough. And what's really encouraging is when we posted that, we had more hits and more distribution of that than any notice we've ever posted. We've had responses from, it's now 6 countries where people plan to go ahead and enact that in September. And so we're very excited that there's going to be community action to support this. It isn't just paper. People are actually going to take these steps to, bring the church to task for all of these ongoing crimes against children.
good, so they should. And as you said, there's been success in Ireland, but also I understand that there's been some, actually, prosecutions have been set in motion in the United States.
It was a very historic case. Just a few days ago, for the first time in history, a Catholic bishop went to court and was found guilty and is now serving time in jail for protecting child-raping priests in the Philadelphia diocese. This was William Lynn. And what was interesting about the case, Ben, was that he was charged with criminal conspiracy. That is, he and Cardinal Bevilacqua actually received orders from Rome to do this, to cover up the fact that over one quarter of all the priests, these are hundreds of priests in Philadelphia, were involved not just in child rape, but in trafficking and passing children around and not telling the police. That's a criminal conspiracy coming right from Rome. The jury, unfortunately, found him guilty on only one count. The criminal conspiracy count was not included in the indictment. So, in effect, that was a way to protect the Vatican. But the important thing is that it opens the door legally for other crimes or other cases being brought against the Catholic hierarchy. So it's a really important step forward.
Yep, this could be interpreted as him being the fall guy and taking the rap for people higher up, which is true. But, of course, it is also a legal precedent, which you can now use when you arrest people. You can, you know, I think under common law you can actually do this. You can, I know you can in this country, you can actually arrest people on the basis of legal precedents.
Well, you know, right in Liverpool, as you know, we saw an example of that at Birkenhead, where a judge was removed. Hundreds of people showed up and removed this judge from his bench for imposing an illegal tax on the community.
Yeah.
And they declared that tax null and void. Well, we have that right as citizens on an even bigger scale when the courts and police are actually colluding in a massive global conspiracy to traffic children, which is what the Catholic Church is doing.
Yeah.
Then we have an obligation to take that action, to put these priests on trial. In some cases, like in Albany, New York, there's already a group forming that are going to go in and publicly defrock this priest in the middle of his mass and evict him from the church. And,
good.
You know, I mean, these are the kinds of things that are needed in the face of collusion by the state in these crimes.
Yeah, definitely. It's this is when the people become aware of their power and they don't just succumb to, you know, that it's believing that they have to obey these various institutions which are basically usurped the law from the people. Kevin, do you have any allies within the church who are actually helping you with this?
There are a surprising number of people who write to me. There's even been people in Rome. When I was there 2 years ago, I was approached by one of the cardinals with a kind of a back-channel communication that they wanted to talk about the work we're doing to identify the grave sites. I was led to believe that there's documents right in the Vatican archives of every person who's ever been persecuted or killed by the church going back well before the Inquisition.
That's got to be a big document.
Oh, yeah. I mean, according to other sources, it's a vast area under the Vatican Library with these archives. And what's interesting is that there's a faction within the Vatican that are trying to get the Pope out, the Joseph Ratzinger. I believe it's the same faction that approached me. They want to do kind of a window dressing reform of the church. They want to get rid of this Pope. And you know, of course, they're not going to change the institution that caused this or even the policy, but they definitely are. There's kind of a faction fight going on right now. They're the ones who released that information. They tried to pin it on the Pope's butler, but it was personal information from the Pope's own diary showing that he was awarding contracts to his friends and family. And, you know, so it's interesting that the divisions within these are not monolithic institutions. There's differences that we can exploit.
Right. The butler did it. Very Agatha Christie. Very Agatha Christie indeed. Now, one of the criticisms that's been laid against you, because you have your number of critics, even among the indigenous population of the Americas, unfortunately, one of the allegations is that you're going completely on hearsay and personal testimony, and there's no physical evidence at all. But could you tell us about the former Branfield Residential School in Ontario, because that's actually not the case. You do have physical evidence, don't you?
Oh, there's a tremendous amount of evidence.
Branford.
On the Branford case, it's the oldest Indian boarding school in Canada, set up by the Church of England in 1832. It was really the prototype where a lot of these tortures and things were first tried out on the Onguahanwe, or the what we call the Mohawk people. And we even found a smoking gun document showing in 1870 there was an agreement between the Crown and some of the local chiefs who were antagonistic towards the Mohawk to agree to wipe out the Mohawk using the school. That's being held by the Church of England. We know where the document is. Besides that document, there is physical evidence now we turned up. We did two different digs last October and November at the site of the school. We found bones that have since been analyzed as having definitely come from children, mixed in with a lot of the remains of pigs and cattle, and also buttons and clothing coming from the school uniforms. Similar digs have already started in two other places in Canada, and they too have uncovered forensic remains of children. So that whole allegation that we don't have physical proof is a lie put out by usually government-funded native chiefs who have a lot to lose when this comes out, since when they were children, they often collaborated with the authorities in these crimes. So, they can't deny these things anymore. They can simply distract and discredit, which is the usual tactics they use.
Yeah, I mean, this is a common activity of empires. I find is that they tend to recruit members of the conquered people to sort of to do their dirty work. I think all imperial powers have done this and across the world, and that's something perhaps we could talk about in more detail later on. One thing that's struck me when I watched Unrepentant is that this is not just a few bad apples. I think you. In one of your other interviews, you talked about the allegation that this is just a few bad apples, and there's nothing organised or institutional about it at all. But that's actually not. You talked about something. I think was it the Conclave of Cardinals or the College of Cardinals?
You mean regarding the residential schools? Or?
Regarding the Vatican. You said that the Pope wasn't the man who was actually in charge. He was the figurehead, and that.
The power in the Catholic Church is always in the College of Cardinals, and specifically the Black Pope. The Jesuit order is really financially and in many other ways the power behind the throne. Mm. But in terms of this genocide, it was never just the actions of individuals. There was a plan from the very beginning, crafted by the Crown of England and the Vatican, to set up institutions that would exterminate indigenous populations and create a new aboriginal, which in the dictionary means not of the original group. Aboriginal people are those who have been processed, brainwashed, and turned into a compliant slave class. And that's an accurate description of Native communities today. They are under the direct thumb of the government of Canada. Indians are not citizens, they're wards of the state. And the majority of the population is being killed off at an enormous death rate that was as high as it ever was 100 years ago. All of that is a definite plan. And, for example, there were laws that were in place sterilizing any native child who wouldn't assimilate and learn the English language. They were automatically sterilized under a law brought in back in the 1920s in Canada. So, I mean, all of that shows intent to wipe out a people, as does the 50% death rate that went on for half a century. I mean, that's not the actions of lone gunmen.
Yeah, it seems to me that there is some kind of global policy in place, because you see, not just in Canada, but in all over the New World, and in Australia too, and in the South Pacific Islands, you hear similar stories coming out. Has that been your experience, Kevin?
Very much. It's one of the reasons that many groups are contacting us around the world. Some of the Aboriginal groups in Australia are working with us, the Maori in New Zealand, the Mayans and others in Central America, even the Sami people in the northern part of Finland and Sweden, they are all saying the same thing. They went through exactly the same policies of extermination, sterilization, all of that. And today, the laws in these countries are crafted, like in Canada, to gradually wipe out the remnant population. And, one of the examples of that is in the foster care system. There's more indigenous children now being put in white foster homes where they lose their language and their culture. There are more children like that now in Canada than there ever were in the residential schools. It's increasing all the time. And as a native mother, it's very easy for you to lose your children and never see them again. Yeah. And, of course, I mean, that has the whole Holly Greig case into England shows, you know, how that can happen so easily. But it's a global phenomena, as is child trafficking, and it all tends to go back to the same source all the time.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the links, because, of course, the links between what you've discovered and what is still going on in the old world in Europe and places like that. You hear similar stories. You hear terrible stories coming out, which seems to be almost endemic and homogenous, and that is the institutional abuse and organized murder of children. Now, and I remember in the film Unrepentant, you show a gravestone of that has been vandalized, and it was someone involved in the logging company, if I remember correctly. Are corporations and governments very much complicit in this?
Oh, very much. From the very beginning, Ben, in North America, there was this triangle between corporate interests, like the Hudson's Bay Company, the churches and the state, the crown. And a perfect example of that I can give you, it's in my book, Hidden No Longer, Genocide in Canada, Past and Present. And you can see that online at hiddennolonger.com. And one of the appendices in there describes Church of England Anglican missionary called John Sheepshanks. He was sent out by the Crown of England in the 1860s to British Columbia, where his job was to inoculate a lot of the Chilcotin Indians with smallpox. And within about 2 months of him doing that, 90% of the Chilcotin Indians were dead. What had happened just prior to that is his business partners in the Hudson's Bay Company had bought up all the land of the Chilcotins. And so right after he had wiped them all out, they inherited a lot of land. John Sheepshanks went back to England, was appointed the Bishop of Norwich, and served in the House of Lords until the year 1907. So he got his payoff in a big way. He's, you know, lauded as one of these heroes of the British Empire.
Mm.
He was disseminating germ warfare all among the Chilcotin Indians.
Yep.
And so that's how it worked. You know, they got the land. They got to claim that they were civilizing the savages. You know, it's the same old technique that they're still using today.
Yeah, same old technique, you say, and that's very, very true. And, of course, there's a very famous story just now about what you mentioned in Unrepentant about how children with smallpox are not isolated from children who don't have smallpox. And smallpox has been used as a weapon of this genocide for very many years. I mean, there's a very famous story of one of the explorers, a British explorer, whose name I can't remember, but he's quite well known, who gave blankets that smallpox victims had used to the Indians as gifts for the absolute purpose of infecting them.
Yeah, that's in our film Unrepentant. And by the way, you can watch it right online at hiddennolonger.com. But
yep.
It was General Jeffrey Amherst.
Right.
And he kept a diary. The Mi'kmaq people in eastern Canada, Nova Scotia, published these journals. And it's in his own handwriting where he describes in the 1740s, he ordered the blankets from the British hospitals to be taken out among the Mi'kmaq Indians who were allied with the French in the French-Indian Wars. And they were almost all exterminated by these smallpox. Now, it was funny because when I was in London, I went into the National Portrait Gallery there in Trafalgar Square. And I noticed Jeffrey Amherst's painting was up on the wall. So I went to the director and I said, "Are you aware of the fact that he disseminated smallpox among Canadian Indians?" The man was very shocked, and he said, "No, we should say something about that." And I said, "You definitely should.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my link. You can see all the information right there."
Oh, well done, Kevin. Well done.
People in London might want to go in there and see if they put up anything.
Well, yeah, next time I drop in, I'll have a look in and see if Amherst's portrait is still there. But, I mean, they're very often, people often have a kind of public image. I mean, history tends to make heroes out of villains and villains out of heroes, I find.
Yeah.
Now, what would you say to people? Because one thing I always hear when I discuss your discoveries and your work is that, you know, a lot of people acknowledge that there was an attempted genocide against indigenous populations in the British Empire and beyond in the past, in the imperial age. But they say, but that doesn't go on anymore. It's over. It's past. We're nicer people now. We live in more civilized times. What would you say to people like that?
Well, I'd ask them to tell me what's going on in Afghanistan and Iraq and Iran. I'd ask them to look at their own laws, which allow, with the Homeland Security laws and everything, allow the same kind of regime that's been going on in Indian reservations for a long time is now being inflicted on the general populace. And I look at the death rate in the indigenous communities. If you just look at that simple statistic, you'll see that it's as high as it ever was among those non-assimilated Indians, the ones living on the street, not the ones getting government money who are, favored, the ones you see on television all the time, but the vast majority who live off reservation, who are dying at an enormous death rate, who have a life expectancy of about 49 years old in Canada still. Tuberculosis is on the increase continually. All of that indicates that it's not yesterday. It's very much carrying on. But unfortunately, a lot of the people saying that are insulated from that reality. They never encounter it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you said in your interview with Alfred Weber that it's possible to be a white Canadian and never meet an Indian in your whole life.
Yeah.
Lisa Shunky, let's go to the comments box for a moment. Lisa Shunky has just posted a link to your film Unrepentant. As I said, it's a very, very easy film to access. It's available on many, many sources, completely free, a feature-length documentary. It's one of the most shocking films you'll ever see, but as I've often said, you know, that would be more shocking would be if you had never made it and no one was talking about this. That would be far more shocking than someone who is talking about it. And so I take heart from that, definitely. As we've said earlier, you know, it seems that there's a global policy going on. It seems like everything you've talked about, and we've confined examples in other countries. There was a video of a lady on YouTube who was talking about her experience in schools, an Indian who was talking about her experience in schools, and she lived in the United States, and it sounded very similar to what you talked about in Unrepentant, and I mentioned your name in the comments box, and she'd heard of you. We've already mentioned Australia, and it does seem that there is a global policy in place. It's like it's not just one government, it's a whole series of governments that seem to be obeying a global policy. Now, and also, it seems to go back in history an awful long way. I mean, certainly throughout the history of the new, you know, the empire, the discovery of the new world. I mean, you go back to the conquistadors, Cortes and the Pizarros and the conquest of Mexico and the Incas. Now, the question I always ask is, why? What's going on? It's just strange, because in fact, before the discovery of the new world, you see similar behavior in Europe.
Yeah.
What is going on? Why are these horrors going on? Why are they doing this?
Well, it's interesting because it's related to the previous comment you had about when people deny that these things are going on. I think that denial is rooted in a great fear people have because they all know it happened to us as well. Look at what happened in England with the enclosures, with the witch hunts, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's aimed at the indigenous traditions we all had, the fact that we lived on the land, we were self-sufficient. Our ancestors had an interest in resisting the kings and the popes, in holding on to our land and our knowledge, our sacred earth wisdom.
Yeah.
All of that was a threat to the papacy and the crowned heads, if you like. And when they were throwing people off their land to grab their land, when they destroyed the commons, they were also attacking our indigenous traditions. You know, and it was very simple. They created they needed to create a massive workforce that would work in their factories and produce wealth for them. It'd be a slave class.
Mm.
And religion was the main weapon they used against people to do that. So, you know, that's why, you know, when Native people are still driven off their land to get their oil and uranium, like here in Canada, it's exactly like what happened 500 years ago in England. And it's why my ancestors were forced out and had to leave. We're all facing that same history and that same ongoing trauma. So I think it's basically because of that. But there's also the simple fact that the whole ideology of Christendom says those who are not Christians, or the secular version is those who are not kind of corporate capitalists, they don't have a right to exist. There's no other model that's allowed in the world, and we'll wipe it out whenever it manifests. So it's that kind of genocidal thinking that's still very much in place.
Yep, I remember very well the opening scene of the film Unrepentant actually has this quote from the Bible, which is, the promised land is yours, go in and slaughter the Canaanites and show them no mercy, you know. And it's a very, very chilling and very, very nasty quote, you know. So this is very, very interesting because in India at the moment there's an ongoing issue. I think I might have spoken to you about this, between a British company called Vedanta Steel and some people who live in the state of Orissa in India, and they're called the Dongriya Khans, and they're an indigenous culture that lives in the heart of India. And Vedanta Steel wanted to set up a bauxite mine on the mountain where they live. And they've moved in, and they've said, we're going... They're coming across as very, very benevolent, and I've often seen this about empires too. They think they act really nice in their words. Well, they say their words are always very, very nice. And Vedanta Steel are actually offering the Dongriya Khans jobs in the mines. Yeah. What it means is the Khans will be taken off their own land. They have a tradition that goes back thousands of years of organic smallholder farming, as you were saying, independent and self-sufficient in terms of their food production and their economy. They have a long spiritual tradition, and I think that the authorities seem to be very, very frightened for whatever reason, which is a big subject. We may not have time to discuss it all, but they seem to be very, very frightened of indigenous spiritual traditions too. They're very, very desperate to shut that down. Everything from the witch burnings to the extermination of the Druids during the Roman occupation of Britain to the conquest by Cortes and Pizarro and the experience that has took place in North America over the last 500 years, right up to the present day. And now, of course, the Dongriya Khans are... What they're actually offering the Dongriya Khans, the Indian government and Vedanta Steel, is homes in the slums where the rest of the workforce work for a few pennies or a rupee a week or something, and eating crap food from tins, and, shutting down their organic farms and things like that. And... I think when you see this breaking out over the world everywhere, there's no doubt that these native indigenous institutions pose a threat to the globalist world government. And you yourself, people who actually speak out about this are posing a threat to them too, like you, me, and everyone listening to this radio, and you in particular. Now, you can we talk for a moment about some of the obstacles you faced? Because you tried to get into Britain, didn't you, last year?
Well, I was in Britain in May 2011. I went over to the Netherlands to speak to some of the freemen on the land movement in the Netherlands. And when I came back to Stansted Airport on May 26th, I was blocked from getting back in. They didn't give a reason. They held me in an immigration prison there for 12 hours, fingerprinted and photographed me, and threw me out of the country. Now, when I left, they said it wasn't a permanent banning. They didn't even give a reason. They wouldn't cite the law, nothing. It was just an exclusion right there.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, it was a few days before I was to speak in Trafalgar Square at a Holy Greek rally where they were talking about the state involvement in child trafficking.
I remember that well because I went along there, and the first thing they had to do was announce that you couldn't get to it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm not letting that stop me. As a matter of fact, I'm coming back in September.
Yes.
And we have more support this time. We're going to have people at the airport documenting what happens to me.
Right.
And we have German television interested, too. So if they try anything, it's going to be seen by a lot of people.
Brilliant. That brings us on to the subject of your forthcoming British tour. I know you're going to be speaking at the Kent Freedom Movement, because I know some people from that, and they asked me to mention that that's going to happen. And you are booked into some other... venues. Could you tell everyone about where those are?
Well, you know, actually, Lisa, who's probably in the chat room, can give you the details. But
she is, yes, she's here.
I'm going September 8th. They're having a Diggers Memorial Gathering in Wigan, and from there, over the next 5 days, I'm going to be speaking in Liverpool and Manchester both.
Great.
We're hoping to hold a protest at the main Catholic Cathedral in Liverpool on Sunday, September 9th. And, about these measures that we've issued to the Vatican.
Mm.
Because the September 15th deadline, we will be initiating these actions, and I'll be in England then. So it should be very exciting. I'm speaking in Brighton on the 20th of September, and then, of course, at Gravesend for the Kent Freedom Movement on the 27th.
Great. Brilliant. And
the other point is there's the annual child abuse rally in Trafalgar Square on the 29th, and I'll be speaking there as well. That's at 1 p.m. on Saturday, September 29th, in Trafalgar Square.
Brilliant. Yeah, it was. I forgot who the name of the person who says that history cannot be permanently falsified, and it is by the. I think it's. This is a perfect example where, by exposing, you know, what has been hidden from history, as you say on your website, is actually directly related to what's going on today in the modern world, in geographical terms of what's happening. And there's an awful lot you can do. You have a list of on your website of things that we can do. Educate yourself and others. There's books you have produced, there's books you've written, and there's a film, of course, Unrepentant. One of the things I'm hoping to do is there's a cinema in Oxford that might actually show your film. I looked into this before when you were doing your sort of aborted last tour, and I wonder if that's something we can try again. And there's many other ideas. There's all kinds of protests and other things that can be that you can do that can you can take action. I ask all Hapanwood Radio viewers to look into this because this is a very, very important issue. Now then, let's have a look through the chat room, see if anyone has any questions for you. Here we go. Lisa's here, if you want to say hello to Lisa.
And, hey, Lisa.
She's talking about the church protest on the 9th of September. That's really, really great. Yeah, it's really, really, it's wonderful.
Well, I especially love going to Liverpool because that's where one of my ancestors, one Peter Annett, who he was a free thinker who the Crown put in the public stocks when he was 70, you know, for attacking the church. So I always love going to Liverpool. It's his hometown.
I remember the book you brought with you. Yeah, it's one of his books.
Yeah,
that was very, very good. That was excellent. Yeah, it's a very old sort of a bit. Cracked and broken up book, but it's the only copy in existence. But you brought it with you to Liverpool. Now, so it seems to be in your family, Kevin. You know, this kind of.
Oh, I guess it runs in the family, yeah.
Yeah, you have a rebellious streak in your genes, obviously. You know. So the future is actually, would you say the future is looking bright? Do you think it's we have a fighting chance?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think things are getting very much worse and very much better all at the same time. There's a conscious minority that's really waking up and is taking action all over the place. Even among groups that you'd think would be really crushed, like Aboriginal people living in the city of Vancouver, this coming Sunday they're planning a church occupation. And they're all very excited about it. They've got their drums and their elders ready. And they're going to go in and not leave. They're going to just permanently occupy this particular church. So, I mean, that's the kind of thing I see happening all over the place, you know.
That's excellent. Yeah, I mean, it's very often it's a hymn to the human spirit actually when people do these kind of things. I mean, really, Paul is asking a question. Paul, who runs a station, says, "What do you know about the Vatican gold reserve?" So, Kevin, do you know anything about that?
I don't know a lot specifically about the gold reserve. I do know that there's a really good group. Called ConcordatWatch.com, and they do a lot of research into the finances of the Vatican Bank, which obviously would include their gold reserves, and the financial concordats which the Vatican has with governments all over the world, where taxpayers' money, including from England, is siphoned directly into the Vatican Bank. So you might want to check out ConcordatWatch.com.
But he
could also write to me. I have people who are doing that kind of research. My email is hiddenfromhistory1, like the number one, hiddenfromhistory1@gmail.com.
And you also have a website called hiddenfromhistory.org, which is well worth a visit.
That's the old one. Hiddennolonger.com is the new one with all our research and the film. And let me mention as well our International Tribunal into Crimes of Church and State. That tribunal has its own site where a lot of our updates are posted, and that's ITCCS.org.
That's right. That's where the top of the list at the moment is on published on the 15th of June. The church has 90 days from today to cease and desist from colluding in the criminal conspiracy to harm children and obstruct justice, known as Crimen Solicitationis. That's very good. It's very, very good and very concise and succinct and very, very to the point and very assertive statement you've made here, which is very, very good indeed. I know from the gold reserve, so I mean, as far as I know, there's a lot of people are talking about gold reserves here. Check out the book God's Banker. Yes, that is a good, but that's a good book about the P2 Lodge, which is interesting. Tim O'Shea's back. Hello, Tim. Glad you're back. They gave all the gold to the interdimensional aliens for interdimensional travel fuel, maybe. Well, that's a big subject, which we don't have time to go into tonight, but, you know, that is something worth discussing in all seriousness. Yeah, you know, this. That is something worth discussing. I know that a lot of the Vatican gold does come from the old Aztec Empire, which was destroyed in a very, very short space of time by Hernan Cortez and his gang of mercenaries. A man who seemed to know where he was going as well. He arrived on the very, very day that that the Aztecs believed that their Messiah would return, which was quite a remarkable coincidence. I think it was a 52-1 chance, which is really remarkable. So they were unopposed by the Aztecs when they came through. There's a lesson to be learned as well, because they also formed an alliance with one of the people, and they played a kind of divide and rule game, and that's one of the other peoples within the Aztec Empire was an ally, became an ally of Cortez. So that's something we've got to be aware of, because they do play divide and rule games with us.
Oh, very much.
They set one tribe against the other. I mean, a lot of the names that we use for various Indian tribes are derogatory kind of nicknames given to them by other tribes. For instance, the Eskimos like to be called Inuit rather than Eskimo, because Eskimo is insulting, is actually a rude word, apparently.
That's right. All the English words for the different indigenous groups are all derogatory in some name.
Now, where should we go next?
Maybe I should mention, too, about this tribunal we're doing.
Yes, please.
After I got tossed out of England last time, I went back to Brussels, and there's a whole group there, and in the Netherlands, that are very interested in pursuing this case. Since I was last in England, there's actually been several attempts by lawyers to serve papers on the Pope and on the entire College of Cardinals for these crimes. They're going ahead with that, and it's very interesting. Even in Italy, there's politicians who want to see this happen. So that's going to be part of the work I do when I'm in Europe in the fall, is working with that to try to reconvene this tribunal. So we can not just hit the apples of the tree. We want to go to the root. Historically, we're working on a new film called Unrelenting. It's kind of a sequel to Unrepentant, where we're looking at the historical roots of these genocidal acts and how they're manifesting today. So that's going to be kind of a long-term thing we'll be working on in the fall in Europe.
Good, yeah, because there is, you've already mentioned about how one of the cardinals wants to, sort of like you said, just get rid of the Pope in a tidying up exercise, I think you called it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the ultimate aim is to expose the actual, completely, all the depravities for what they are to the open world. Now, this is, it's going to be, I think there are some secrets, I've spoken about this when I was on the Rich Planet TV show, that are so big that if they're ever exposed, they rock the whole of society.
Yeah.
And I think this is one of them. But it has to come out. I mean, there's nothing more appalling than these things just carrying on going on. There's absolutely nothing more appalling than that. I mean, so just getting rid of the Pope and putting a new Pope in, that makes a point, but the College of Cardinals has to be dealt with, and maybe, whoever is at the top of this, whoever the top of the hierarchy is in these various places, I mean, God knows who they are. I mean, I say Illuminati, people call the Mother World names. I don't know. It doesn't really matter who they are so much as what they're doing.
Right. Well, there have got to be major structural changes. I mean, basically, the Vatican, the Catholic Church, and any church that harms children has got to be brought under public control. So one of the things the Irish group was saying was they should license priests as public servants.
Yes.
So that they can lose their license if they harm a child.
Yeah,
get rid of this whole canon law nonsense.
Yeah, I think so too. It's this is a point I was made. It's been made by many of the humanists and sort of secularists in this country have spoken a lot about this, about the disestablishment of the church and
right.
I mean, a lot of them are not in for abolishing the Christianity. Of course, I mean, there's nothing wrong with Christianity. I mean, Jesus, the words of Jesus and the teachings of Jesus. There's nothing wrong with them per se. It's the institution that's grown up around it, I think. I mean,
well, it's the institution of the church that's tried to destroy Christianity, and it's done quite a good job on doing it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not a religious man. But there is one prayer I always say, and that is, Lord Jesus Christ, deliver me from your followers. I think that's the one prayer I always say. Now, we're going to have to finish in a minute, Kevin, but the Reverend Wawa has posted a video on here. I don't know what it is. Maybe he will write and explain, but it's a picture of what looks like the Pope shaking hands, I think, is it with Mussolini, with Benito Mussolini? Reverend, could you please explain what this video is? Right.
Are you talking to me, Ben?
I'm sorry, mate. I'm talking to the comments box. I mean,
okay.
If you could explain, Reverend, while we're just closing now, exactly what that is, because we'd be interested to see. Here we are. God's Banker YouTube. Right. It's a video called God's Banker. Thank you very much, Reverend. Wawa. That's something we're going to go into. Now, Kevin, we're going to have to end in a moment, but hopefully we'll get you back to, you know, we'll get you back on. I'll have you back on the show anytime you like, and I'm sure other hosts will as well. You know, you. It's a great honour to speak to you. It's a great honour to have you on. And I think you're doing a wonderful job, mate. You really are.
Well, thanks, Ben. And I hope maybe in August, before I get to England, we can do an update and we'll have more specific details about where I'll be and how people can get involved.
Yes, indeed. In fact, I'm quite happy for you to use this show as a way to advertise and promote your tour. That's absolutely fine with me. In fact, it'd be perfect. That's exactly what I want to do. So, Kevin, I want to, once again, thank you for being on the show. It's about one, I think it's coming up to half past 12 where you are. So have a nice afternoon.
And, thank you. Have a good evening, all of you. And I really look forward to meeting you all in September when I come to Blighty.
Yeah, all right. Well, take care, Kevin. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Well, the Panmo TV viewers, that was Kevin Annett. And I hope you liked him. He was excellent.
Pride and dignity, stop the new world order. Welcome to Panwo Radio.
Well, that, what can I say? That is one of the most important interviews I think you're ever likely to hear, in all modesty. Which Kevin was the man, not me, and he did a very, very brilliant. It was very, very good of him to come on and to give you that information. And there's an awful lot, I think, is going to happen in the next couple of months in many, many different areas. Now, There's a lot of can you hear me? Hello? Can you hear me all right? I've suddenly gone quiet. I think that's just Kevin coming off the line. No problem. There's a drum roll again coming from the chat box. A lot of people saying here, thanks to you. Paul says, thank you, Kevin. Great work, my friend. Yes, he was indeed. And great stuff, Ben. Thanks, Lisa. Yeah, and watch this space. Yes, Lisa, watch this space. Definitely. Yes, we can. We can indeed, Lisa. Yeah. I think we've had a wonderful response in the chat box here. I mean, this has been a great show indeed. Going to have to end in a minute. It's now nearly the end of Programme 2. I'm already making plans for Programme 3, like I said. There's going to be more to come. This programme is also going to be podcasted. I will post a link to the podcast as soon as it is up on the Her Panmo Radio blog. So, basically, I want to thank you all for listening, Paul. Yeah, thanks very much, Paul. Yeah, I've had a really, really good time. I've really enjoyed it, and I look forward to doing the show next week. There'll be a live report. Well, not live, sorry, but my show will be live, but there will be a report from the Exopolitics Conference in Liverpool, the first one of many, and I'm going to be hopefully having another guest in, and Rob Freeman's, I think that's a good way to end the show. Robert Freeman says Kevin must come back on. Yes, he must. We must get him on here to learn more. Well, I'm going to leave you now with a little song called Stop Crying Your Heart Out by Oasis. Now, I'm a big fan of Oasis, and I will sing them in karaoke. And now I'm going to play them, which is very, very good. So until next week, thank you for listening.
Hospital Porter's pride and dignity, stop the new world order. Welcome to Panwo Radio.